everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 190. Today we're going to be talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 5, Episode 1, Buffy vs. Dracula, and Angel, Season 2, Episode 1, Judgment. As usual, if you would like to get in contact with us, you can hit us up on email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at re_watchable. This post on Hypeable.com or our Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And please remember to keep that spoiler-free for newbies. I'm Karen, and I am your lead host this week. I'm a super fan, and I'm also joined by Caitlin, who is another super fan, and our newbies, Danielle and Mitch. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Surprise, Danielle's here.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row.
Woo.
Marshmallows, I guess, unite I'll kick all this of off. Us. Oh, that's great.
What was that?
Marshmallows. We're all Veronica Mars fans.
Oh, that's nice.
I know. This is sweet. I like this. This is going to be a fun episode.
We should start off with our fun facts. And Mitch, would you like to go first?
Yes. So, I'm allergic to the mold in Seattle. And that's a thing. Wow. I didn't know that was a thing. But the reason I've been lately has been because it's been really getting at me. So even though I had tonsil surgery, I still get that sore throat feeling a lot, and there's nothing I can really do to help it here. And I guess that's just that. The Pacific Northwest is going to do that to me. So I'm figuring out what I'm doing with all that, but that was an interesting development. I haven't been on Rewatchable in, I think, a month. Maybe Thanksgiving got in the way. But I think that's I'm saving also some stuff that's happening in my life that's fun, really fun facty, for not about the weather, because I need to save some of these really fun developments happening everywhere in my life. But that's the least fun fact of my life, so if that's a bit ironic, that's okay.
I mean, fair enough. That's fair. Caitlin, what about you?
My fun fact is that after being unemployed all fall, I'm going to be super busy in the spring because I'm going to be teaching 5 classes between 2 different colleges.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Is there a lot of travel involved?
For one of them, it's half an hour, and for the other one, it's 10 minutes.
Oh, that's not so bad.
So it's going to be, I'm going to be teaching every day, which will be nice because I won't have to worry about a lack of income anymore.
Yes. That's really exciting. And Danielle, what about you?
My fun fact is that even though we're not really that close to it yet, my friend and I have started doing our Oscar bait watching. So every year, my best friend and I, we go, and once all of the Best Picture nominees come out, we make a goal to watch all of them, just so we can be more informed when we're rooting for things. And so this year we really didn't want to wait. And so we've started watching things that we think will be Oscar baity. So last week we saw Moonlight, which I can't really explain because otherwise it'll give too much away, but it was a really good film. And then this weekend, yesterday, we saw Manchester by the Sea with Michelle Williams and Casey Affleck. So we're getting our Oscar stuff in early. And I guess we're just assuming that these are going to be Oscar films because everybody says they're going to be. So we're let's go see them.
That's smart. I actually, until I started living with Kristen, I wasn't super into the Oscars. But this past year, we went out and we watched a whole bunch of the ones that were up for the Best Picture nomination, and I actually really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to doing the same this year, so hooray for that.
Yeah, I remember talking to you about them, as you were seeing them, too, because I think we were seeing them around the same time. We're like, did you see this one? Yeah! What'd you think? And it was fun.
Daniel, do you always win that hypeable poll that's, within the staff, guessing who's gonna get each nomination or whatever? I was always so horrible at it, but I feel like you were always the master of it because you're studying up on it.
I think I've predicted the best picture 2 years in a row, or the best picture that I liked won 2 years in a row, because that was Birdman and Spotlight.
Well, move aside, Academy. Danielle is here.
I know, but I think I get a lot of the other stuff wrong because I think I was kind of anti-Leo last year, but then Leo won. So.
That's tough, yeah. It's
cool. That's all he needed was for Danielle to be anti-Leo just so he could win.
Yes, we've been waiting.
Yeah, I'm the one that pushed him over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and the bear. My fun fact for this week is not too happy of a one, but it's the only thing that I spotted in my room that I had a story about at the moment was, okay, so I think you guys know that I'm not, like, huge on Christmas. I really love Halloween, and it takes me a while to get into the Christmas spirit. Last night, I found my Christmas spirit. We were decorating the tree and watching How the Grinch Stole Christmas, or The Grinch, the live-action one, and I just got really into it. And then I had hot cocoa, and we ate cookies, and it was amazing. I was gonna wear this sweater that I bought, like, a couple of weeks ago. It's a Harry Potter, like, ugly Christmas sweater. It's not really that ugly, but it's that sort of pattern, like the geometric patterns and the repeating stuff on it. And it says, I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good. I went to put it on today, and I realized that they never took the security tag off of it.
Oh.
No.
Do you freeze that? Is that what you do to get it to come off? I've heard that being a thing.
No, they're like...
Butter knives, like you can pry it open.
But...
I swear that I don't know this because I've done it myself. It's because I used to work at a clothing store, and that was I just asked one day because I was curious. Not that I wanted to do it once again, but I was like, why would people even take it with that on? They're like, oh, you can pry it open with a butter knife. Look at, I'm just giving everyone my trade secrets over here. This is horrible.
I'm sure I know there's a way to do it, but
because you get ink because sometimes if you try and take them off, ink will explode.
What scares me. But I don't think they do that anymore necessarily. I think, like, some of them are ink wells and some of them aren't.
Try the freezing bit, because wouldn't the freezing part freeze the ink and then you could pry it open and then it won't explode? Am I wrong on
Maybe.
That?
Maybe. I don't know. I'll YouTube it later.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Buffy. We're doing episode 501, Buffy versus Dracula. In this episode, as the tin reads, Buffy fights Dracula. The OG vamp woos almost everyone, with Buffy at the forefront of said wooing. However, she is able to fight his hypnotism enough to stake the creep and turn him into temporary dust. Oh yeah, and did Joss forget to mention one little thing for 4 seasons? Yeah, Buffy has a sister. Yep. Okay. Before we get to that revelation, we're going to save that for the end, but... The first question here is, did anyone appreciate this type of gimmicky episode? I feel like after 5 seasons, like, or 4 whole seasons, meeting Dracula is kind of on par. It was a little silly. It was a little campy. It was definitely Buffy. Caitlin, how do you feel about this episode?
I adore this episode because it's just, like... It takes all these stereotypes about Dracula and kind of plays them up. Like, they make him look like the movies and everything, and they make his accent, like, really over the top and everything. But, like, not too much out of the realm of what could work in the show, but it's very clearly, like, parodying the whole vampire and Dracula thing. So I think it's so much fun. And I really adore this episode and the way he comes back at the end, like, keeps coming back. Just, it's the best. I think this one is so much fun, and I think they hit the right tone with it because they don't take it too seriously.
Yeah, definitely. And Danielle, you said you really enjoyed this episode, right?
I loved this episode so much. Going off of what Caitlin just said, there was something about the tone of this episode that I think was sort of the tone that I had been maybe missing from Buffy for a while. It was light, it was fun, but I mean, there were also important things going on. It was just the perfect balance of all of these different aspects. And the fact that they were facing off against Dracula, like the title said, I don't know. It was one of the most enjoyable Buffy episodes I think I have watched.
Wow.
I think I got the most enjoyment. This is like, way up there for me, because I don't remember enjoying an episode as much as I think I enjoyed this one.
That's amazing. That's great. Mitch,
yeah, I don't know how it happened.
So, you know, what I think is interesting is that as much as Danielle loved this episode, it's like her favorite, she's saying, I didn't absolutely adore it, but I appreciate it for what they're doing, because it feels like they're ticking off the Universal Movie Monsters, because we've had, like, Frankenstein with the guy that wanted Cordelia back in season one, and now we're having Dracula, so I guess it's only a matter of time. Maybe we have Frankenstein's Bride, or maybe even The Mummy. That'd be kind of fun. I'd be cool with, even going into some of the plot of, that movie. I think that'd be kind of cute if you, jumped into that universe just for a little bit. That's fine for me. I think that this is necessary for fans that do watch the show, like Danielle's saying, for, this fun, whimsical thing where really no one's going to get hurt or, permanently scared or scarred or anything from this. This is just going to be a one-and-done kind of come in, come out, and he's gone.
Technically, we did have a mummy already.
Incan mummy girl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. She did like those Twinkies. So, I guess we did.
Not a euphemism?
Well.
Or is it? this episode is absolutely ridiculous, but just really fun anyway. And I think, Caitlin, you definitely spot on when you said, they play up those characteristics of Dracula and they poke fun at it, but at the same time, he is a serious threat throughout the episode. And I want to know, newbies, if you think he will be coming back, if you think that we were just introduced to the big bad, or do you think this is like a one and done kind of thing? I mean, we're not going to tell you the answer, but I'd like to know what your speculation is.
I mean, I don't think that they would make Dracula the big bad. I think that would be a different kind of show that Buffy is not. I do think perhaps he might pop up again, perhaps in the same way that kind of Spike used to, but not as nearly as frequently, I don't think, but just in the capacity of he's around, maybe he'll help them or something at some point, or he'll need their help, but not enough for him to be a mainstay of the show.
Yeah, I agree. I put this question in the doc because I don't see the big bad at all in this. I'm always going to call these the pilot episodes of Buffy, because it always feels like they're setting up almost not quite a new universe, but a new concept every season. This is not a new concept at all. This is really just the one and done gimmick, and I'm okay with that. But I do see him coming back in a tie-in book. He's going to probably be back then, and that'll be still inconsequential from the fact that it's a tie-in book. But I'm okay with that, because I think that builds universe, and some people do watch shows just to have universe building, not always to have major events, but to have their characters interacting with things they've done before, things like that. So I can appreciate, once again, adding him in and even keeping him around with that whole "I've seen your movies" thing before. That was cute. It's fine if he comes back in just a little small way.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And moving on before we get into major plot points in this episode, but Anya is also now a series regular for season 5. Are you guys excited for that, or are you kind of over the whole Anya thing?
I'm a big Anya fan. I love her. Ever since she had that little tirade during the prom episode where she's like, "Men are evil, will you go to prom with me?" I was like, oh my god, she's me! I loved every little bit of her. I think she's amazing. Great actress. I think it's really fun how they brought in a character that was from a one-and-done episode, but made them a very important character, and in a very organic way. Xander wasn't cool with it. He was like, I mean, you're attractive, but, you kind of just, killed all my friends in an alternate universe, but I still kind of like it. So, and she's still that person. She stayed true to that, evilness, but she's, trying to learn how to be good, and that's been fun to see her have that learning curve of being a normal sociable human.
Yeah, and I think my reaction to it when I was looking at the credits, because I enjoy seeing who they throw in there at the beginning or at the middle of the season. And when I saw that she was in there, I was just my reaction was, finally. She has been around enough to the point where it was kind of weird that she wasn't in there. And I'm glad that she's sticking around, because she adds a certain personality that we haven't had, or that the other Scoobies can't really cover. She's very blunt. She's very honest, and kind of says what's up, which, I don't know, it's great for humor, but it's also very helpful. So I'm glad that she's sticking around and that she's being elevated to a series regular.
Like when Oz walks back in and then she goes, "Everyone's uncomfortable now."
She's quite observant, that Anya.
The thing is, I don't see her sticking around, Danielle. Do you? Like, I feel like this is probably her last season. It just doesn't feel like she's part of the entirety of the Buffy mythos.
I mean, if not that we can read anything into, like, series regulars or not, because that just, it doesn't work like that. But I think that by making her a series regular, that we might have plot lines that revolve around her at some point.
But doesn't it just feel like we're setting her up to kill her? Like, bringing her in as a series regular, like, just important enough, but still keeping around the OG Scoobs?
I don't know. Have they done that previously, though? Or, like, is that
No, that's the
same
thing.
For the
for
Riley guy? Do you feel the same way for him?
So morbid, Mitch.
Well, yeah. It's morbid or not, it's the way that a lot of these procedural TV shows work, and I'm starting to see that pattern forming, I think, with Buffy. And I'm also wondering, too, if that's the pattern Buffy started. Maybe this is something I'm seeing because I've seen it in other shows and they've copied Buffy.
It's a good question, and it's a fair question. Obviously, once again, hashtag no comment. You're just going to have to wait and find out. But good question.
Danielle originated the hashtag no comment. Oh, my heart's so warm.
Mm-hmm. I miss our Veronica Mars days. Mm-hmm. They're not that I don't love the Buffy round or any of our other rounds, too, but
it's very fitting some good times that we're coming back into Buffy, because it does feel like Veronica Mars is so inspired by Buffy. So I love comparing the two and bringing in, like, you know, blonde kick-ass leads that don't need no man or that kind of stuff. It's fun.
Yeah. But speaking of Anya, you can't help but mention Xander as well. And Brittany was supposed to be on this episode with us, but some stuff happened, so she wasn't able to make it. But she says in here, Xander was surprisingly the MVP of this episode. And Caitlin, I want to know what you thought about his role that he played here.
That's an interesting thought that he's the MVP. I would not have put him in that category. Because he's pretty much brainwashed the entire time, but he's kind of hilarious while he's being brainwashed. But, you know, he's there, he's being the comic relief, it seems like. Though he does have a moment at the end where he's, you know, sick of being the comic relief, so we'll see if that turns into anything for him or not, because he's been the comic relief for into five seasons now, so.
Yeah, that was actually the question I was going to pitch to newbies. You know, he gets really fed up at the end, and he's like, look, I'm done being the person that eats the weird bugs and falls in love with demons and gets brainwashed and stuff.
The funny chlamydia, that got me.
Yeah. Do you guys think that that's going to stick, or do you think he's just going to go back to being regular old Xander?
I mean, well, Cordy's stuck, so I see Joss having the ability of taking out the comedic relief, but I think it's important to note that he's always going to have to add it back in. So I think Anya took Xander's place, and they need him to balance her character out. So if they're both comic relief, it's like, you know, where can we go with this? But if he's the one guiding her, leading her, it's more interesting.
Or perhaps, like, the comic relief will be pushed in a different way, because right now he's sort of been the slapstick sort of comic relief, again, with the eating bugs or getting brainwashed by Dracula. So I'm wondering if all of the things that he listed are things that maybe he won't be the comic relief for anymore, but he still will be the comic relief in slightly different ways.
Did he eat bugs, or was he about to be eaten by a bug? I don't remember him.
Like, he ate two bugs in this episode.
Yeah, he grabbed him off the walls.
Oh my gosh, he did. Okay, no, I was thinking this was like something Lost Boys-like, where the maggots come from like the rice or something. No, okay, I'm with you.
So gross.
Yeah, that scene just scars you. Oof, don't watch that movie just because of that. The worms and the lo mein. Ooh. Ugh.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about some other things that are maybe also slightly uncomfortable, but in a completely different way. It's just kind of a funny scene, but Giles and the three sisters sort of getting it on. He didn't really want to leave. Brilliant.
If that was hilarious. His death, he was okay with that.
Right? He really wanted his shoe back. That's the only reason why he wanted to go back there.
Right.
Death by vampire orgy.
Anthony Stewart's got
there
it going
are worse
on.
Ways to go.
Like, he's like all like, you know, his like a chest is rippling and showing through his ripped open shirt. I'm just like, oh, okay, three sisters. I'm with that.
Danielle, you might have to fill in for Brittany's undying love of Giles. I'm sure she was soaking up this scene.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was writing down, or I was immortalizing the death by vampire orgies. There are worse ways to go. So, but yes, no, I really enjoyed Giles and the ladies, even though there was no, like, I'm not personally sure of the context of the ladies. I'm assuming they're a part of the Dracula lore, which I don't know much about. But the way he was just so into it. And then even when he was trying not to be into it, you could tell it was just kind of a front. And I love Giles more and more that he's like loosening up character wise. And it's not just like comedy in him being the straight man all the time, or him being like the really, really rigid person, but now it's comedy in him being Giles. There's a little bit of a shift that I've really enjoyed.
And I guess we shouldn't be surprised, Danielle, that he's more of a scoundrel than you'd first assume with him being a librarian, but it makes sense that he was called the Ripper, okay?
With him ripping off clothes?
Well, I'll let your imagination run with that one.
I think it just did.
Okay.
I mean, we've already been talking about vampire orgies, so, you know.
Yeah.
What else? But speaking of some other sexy scenes / slightly uncomfortable scenes, we do see Dracula come into Buffy's bedroom. And Mitch, I assume you're the one that put this in here. I actually completely agree with you about this. Sarah Michelle Gellar has this way of making getting bitten look so erotic. And I definitely think it's on purpose. Like, we've seen that before in other scenes, especially between her and Angel. Like, it's definitely supposed to be very intimate, but she really plays it up, and it really, you know, does it justice.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of when Willow was doing, like, the orgasm spell. Like, it was that uncomfortable. I was like, why are you getting off to this?
Hey, some people have their things, and you just, you know, can't judge him for that.
So is this the bed? This is the Faith bed that Faith and Buffy made. Am I supposed to be getting some significance from that?
I don't think so.
Which
right?
one is that bed? Is that in Faith's apartment? I'm trying to remember if it stays the same. Because you super fans keep pointing out, like, there's the bed, it's back. And I'm like, why? Why do I care? So now I'm like, okay, bit by a vampire in that bed. That must be something, like, major, but I guess not.
I honestly didn't notice it. That's an interesting point. I was just, like, looking at it, like, how it was following the Dracula lore, or, like, the Dracula story, where, like, he comes into a bedroom at night, and it's very almost ethereal and, like, light, warm light and all of these other things. And I think it's interesting that you're talking about making getting bitten so erotic, because it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, like, in every vampire sort of thing, getting bitten is supposed to be like this analogy for like being sexual, and it's good. I like the fact that Sarah Michelle Gellar makes it look not cheesy or not uncomfortable. Like you said, the scene itself was uncomfortable, but like this part of it felt true, or like felt interesting, and so I'm glad that she's able to do that with this vampire lore, because that's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and the reason I say uncomfortable is because there's no real consent ever like Dracula, because that's his thing. Like, he's there to hypnotize you and to do what he wants with you. So that's creepy, you know? But I think Sarah Michelle Gellar, you're right, does a good job of balancing that out and making it, like, the most, like, stomachable that you possibly could get it to be. She's a great actress. I love her as our lead. I think she's able to sell a lot of the super hokey, cheesy, mist coming through my bedroom window kind of stuff here.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Absolutely. And Dracula, you know, as funny as he is and how much we, like, laugh at him, because we don't have this point in the doc, but we do see Spike in this episode, and he's like, Dracula, he just got famous, and like, he's such a weirdo, and you know, like, he kind of laughs at him too. But Dracula has a huge point in this episode, in that he's there to continue the discussion that started in Restless about who Buffy is, what she's trying to be, that darkness inside of her, that killer instinct that's inside of her, and what it actually means to be a Slayer. And I think, as jarring as the episode Restless can be, because it really is, the whole thing is just dreamland, and you have to interpret a lot of stuff, and going back and watching it helps make it make more sense, but at first glance it can be really difficult to interpret. But by the end of the episode, you kind of get where they're coming from, and the fact that they're continuing that into season 5, that that was all purposeful, that it was all there for a reason, I think is really important to note and point out.
Yeah, I put this point in the doc because I mentioned in the last episode we were talking about Restless, that Restless feels a little bit more like it belongs to season 5 than it belongs to season 4. Mm-hmm. And I was specifically talking about the continuation we see of that theme in this episode, which obviously I couldn't talk about last week.
Yeah.
But, you know, we see that it's very much a continuation of this idea that, you know, Buffy is starting to delve into this idea of what it means to be a Slayer. We literally see her, she calls what she's doing hunting, which is not something we've ever heard her say in terms of how she views slaying before. But now she's literally restless because mm-hmm. she can't sleep at night until she goes out and kills some vampires. So, you know, that seems to be something that the show is very now interested in exploring. We've kind of set up the world and now we're going to start delving more into what it means to be a Slayer.
And I wasn't right. on for the finale, but I love what you're saying, Caitlin, about it being like, yeah, she's restless, can't sleep, has to kill. I love also thinking to how scared I actually was watching Restless, because the way they do the first Slayer, the way they shoot, you know, the creepy crawling scenes and slowly walking towards you in that kind of Jason way, it was really awesome. I loved it. I think that it shows now in Buffy's personality that very barbaric Slayer still lives within her, in that we almost should be scared because she's turning into a different person. She's not the same at all after Restless. And I guess I have my answer for why can't we just go into the Slayer avatar state all the time, because shit like this happens. You need to back off the magic sometimes, I guess. That's okay.
I also like how this ties into Giles's story, because I know newbies have been complaining for a while, not complaining necessarily, but noting that Giles is kind of useless. And the great thing is that the show points that out too. In this episode in particular, he feels useless. He feels like he has to go back to England because Buffy doesn't need him anymore. But as she explores what it is to be a Slayer and this growing need to hunt throughout this episode, she realizes she wants to be better. She wants to know more about what it is to be the Slayer. She wants to train harder, and she wants to really hone her skills and become even more powerful, and she cannot do that without Giles. And that is such a wonderful thing for him to hear, but also finally gives him purpose, which I think is going to be exciting for everyone to see.
It's just ironic that it comes when he decided she no longer needed him.
Yep. But would you, I mean, this is kind of a silly question. How sad would you guys have been if Giles had left permanently?
Oh, devastated. It would not have been good. Because they would have had to fill his role, and I wouldn't have been okay with that. Because no one ever would be the Giles. And it's funny, too, because, like, thinking back to season 1, I was anti-Giles. I was like, who is this old guy in the library? And then now I'm like, Daddy, stay around, please. Like, total flip. And I love it.
And you've seen his forearms, and you're just sold.
Oh my gosh. It's been love at first sight of forearms.
Boy. Yeah, I would be super upset. Just because they're young people, some of the decisions that the Scoobies make are like, some of the directions that they go make you want to yell at the screen like, no, don't do that, what are you doing? And so I think, for the most part, Giles is a good balance to that, because he'll put them in their place. He'll be like, no, this is what we should do. And I like having the balance of both both the like, hey, let's think about this, and then the hey, let's do it. The Hamilton Burr sort of like relationship that's mm-hmm. going on right now.
Yeah, definitely. And Caitlin, I know you really like the Giles and Buffy dynamic. Did this scene give you all the feels?
I love it. Because to me, it shows, you know, a lot of growth on Buffy's part, that she has matured enough to know that she needs help and to ask for it. And that's a sign that she's growing and that she's really taking her calling seriously, that she wants to look more deeply into it. And I think that makes Giles very proud of her, to see how much she's growing and accepting being the Slayer. And it's so sweet, and I love it.
Especially since he didn't have to pull that out of her, you know? Like, for a very long time, especially when they were in high school, he was always nagging her and always pushing her to be the person that he knew she could be, but she was much more interested in trying to be normal. And now she has grown as a person. She has come to this conclusion to pursue her Slayer abilities herself, and that, I think, also makes him proud, because it is so fulfilling to see her develop into the person that he knew she could be all along.
I wonder if the newbies think that there's a time that Buffy will ever not need Giles. Like, maybe it's not now, but will she ever not need him?
I think the dream makes it apparent that Giles is more in need of Buffy than she is of him, because she is his child, his reason, his purpose. Yes, his reason he can't move on, but as long as she's alive and kicking, he needs to be there for her. So in terms of how that relates to Buffy, even if she outgrows him, he won't go away, because she'll need to be there to not only keep this character relevant and interesting for some people. I mean, I'm okay with just the forearms, but also to make it so that Giles feels important. That character feels like he has a goal, a thing to do. We saw here, yeah, he was going to go back to England. He didn't feel like he had anything anymore. But now that we know that he's feeling important again, I'm cozy and I'm content to know that he's part of the formula. He's staying around, and I'm not nervous. I don't think, like, even in, when he said he's going to England, I was like, no, you're not. No, you're staying here. That's not a thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that because his life revolves so much around Buffy, or that's kind of how he's been brought up, that he's not, there isn't going to be a time where he's not going to be around. I think he's kind of necessary again in terms of like mindset, but also just because they lean on each other and they're very important pieces of each other's lives, and they can't separate without there being dire consequences. But at the same time, there's no precedence for a watcher, or, I mean, Giles has been not a watcher for a while, but I'm assuming he's going back to being it. But there hasn't been precedence for a watcher sticking around this long, because none of the Slayers have lasted this long. So I think there's an element of him maybe going forward, having to figure out how he fits in and making sure that he still does fit in.
All excellent points. And I think it's important to note, too, that regardless of whether or not Buffy, quote-unquote, needs Giles, it's apparent that having friends is an asset. And even if Giles isn't necessarily in an official watcher capacity regarding Buffy as the Slayer, she still needs him. She still relies on him and all of her friends. And I think that's one of the reasons why Buffy is so powerful and has lasted so long, is because she has those people to lean back on. So hopefully that will never change. Okay, final point of the episode. Caitlin and I are just going to sit back and not say anything. But newbies, I would like you guys to discuss that Buffy apparently has a sister played by Michelle Trachtenberg.
Are we in Wishverse? Are we still in Wishverse, Danielle? Did I miss something?
I've been watching a lot of, I actually just watched the whole DC TV crossover thing, so I'm in the mind of somebody messed up the time continuum, and how did she get here?
Because Buffy like, and Joyce are so cool with it. They're like, yeah, your sister. And I'm like, your sister?
Yeah, I want to know who went back in time and changed what so that she's here.
Barry Allen, dang it!
So, I mean, then I'm with you, Danielle. Let's speculate. Who did it? Who done it? Do we know the person yet? Was it Michelle Trachtenberg herself? Did she want to get into this? Was she like, I like those Scoobies. I'm going to work my way in through magic and time travel.
I don't know. Like, I have to say that one of the downfalls of being someone watching this show however many years too late is that when characters show up like this, I have seen them while, like, in passing previously. So, like, I have seen Michelle Trachtenberg, and I think I saw an episode in a class of mine, of a media class, where we watched Buffy, and she was in it, and mm-hmm. acting like a sort of, like, bratty little person. So the fact that she's a sister here makes sense to me. Right. In the same way that I've seen, I don't know his name, but we'll get to him when we get to Angel, but the green guy with the horns. I've seen him before, and I've been waiting for him to show up, and I always thought that he was Spike, but, like, Spike got sick and then turned green. I'm not kidding. I was like, okay, cool. When Spike showed up earlier seasons, I was like, okay, when is he going to turn green? What is going to make him turn green?
At some point, he's going to get really sick to his stomach and turn green.
But I guess, like, by having these preconceptions about them, or, like, knowing that they exist and, like, having flashes of them, like, I don't know if Michelle Trachtenberg being the sister, if there's going to be some sort of major twist just because I've been slightly spoiled but didn't know it. I don't know if that all makes sense, but that was what is in my head right now.
This is like the whole Lick perspective. It's like when I thought they were together, because in Veronica Mars season 3's DVD, Dick has his hand on Logan's shoulder, and not only did it spawn the ship, but it continued it after. So you could also go off of what you think was a spoiler and create your own theory and then run with it and have even more fun.
That's true. Like when I thought main character in Korra was going to die, I knew it. I knew it as a fact, yeah. And then they didn't.
That was great. Yeah, you're like, I think it was like
was
you're like, Mako
was
going to die.
Like 3 seasons, and now you're telling me that it never happens? Oh, so yeah. Much pain. I couldn't say
that's exactly my spoiler. No, that's the thing, though, Karen, right? There's a secret spoiler that I'm not going to say that I thought was Michelle Trachtenberg, but it wasn't true as well. Maybe it is. That's the thing. I kind of like these half spoilers in a way that we all kind of get from being in society, because then you have like, okay, but now I have to figure out how this happened, or if this is real, or if I'm making this up, or I saw it wrong. And yeah, you can go a lot into the loony bin if you get into looking at spoilers and trying to see how it's going to go. It's almost better just to let it play out. And that's where I'm at with, like, I'm just going to see Georgina for a bit from Gossip Girl. And that's going to probably stick, unfortunately, because I mean, there's a thing about Michelle that I find it hard to get over that character she plays. So, you know, going from Danielle's interpretation of her being kind of snotty and bratty, I think it's going to be really hard for me to like her, and it's going to be difficult for me to get through her scenes, because I really, the actress might be a lovely woman, but I can't stand her, because she does it so well. She kind of reminds me of, like, my little sister growing up, like, picking on me and always, like, you know, like, getting me in trouble and tattling. Like, that's the kind of person she feels like to me on screen. So this is going to be a stressful experience for me now that she's on the show as assumedly a series regular, or I don't even know what she's going to be, a guest star.
This is so great. I'm so excited.
It'll be like a love-hate Georgina relationship.
What was that?
I said you're welcome for all of these insights to make you so excited.
It's going to be good. Yeah, I definitely don't even want a chance saying anything that will affect the way you guys view this. But obviously next week we'll get some more information and we'll just have to see what happens. But until then, let's jump into our favorite scenes here. Mine, we kind of already talked about. It was just when Giles' face sort of lights up when Buffy says that she still needs him, because he changes. Like, he was dead set on going to England. He was starting to prepare everybody. And that one scene with Buffy, and he's just like, I'm staying. Like, what else am I going to do? Like, this is the job for me. And I really appreciated that. Caitlin, what was yours?
Mine is the end of the episode when it seems like, you know, everything is all good because Buffy staked Dracula and he's gone and it sounds like they've all left, and then Dracula dramatically starts coming back and then Buffy's right there and stakes him again, and it's like, I watch your movies and then he starts coming back again. She's like, I'm right here. Like, Oh, it's so funny, and it's such just the whole tone of this episode and how they're dealing with Dracula, and it's just the perfect representation of it.
It's a good
Yeah.
schlock. There's bad schlock, there's good schlock. This definitely fits in that good schlock camp.
And Mitch, that actually goes right into your favorite scene.
Yeah, kind of schlocky too. It's when everyone's not taking Dracula seriously at the graveyard because they're like, "So cool, you're a celebrity." He's like, "No, I'm evil." And they're like, "Turn into a bat, turn into a bat."
And Danielle?
Mine was the Scoobies at the beach, just because it was a very California thing for California kids to do, and I sometimes forget that that's where all of them are. But also in the way that even though they are California kids, some things are different, like Buffy taking Riley out with a football, or Willow almost taking off Xander's eyebrows when she starts the fire. Like, it's funny to see these normal things made abnormal by these characters, and it was just really enjoyable.
And of course, it was very
Yeah.
Veronica Mars of them, too, to be hanging out all sexy on the beach. Like, oh, it's so sunny here.
Of
Wow.
course.
But
Yes.
you bringing up Riley
100%.
reminds me, like, he became even more Wonder Bread in this episode because he's lost all importance. Now the initiative doesn't exist. What is his
Yeah, I
deal?
agree with that.
I was trying to think of, like, a point about what he had to do in this episode to write in the doc, and every other character had one but him. He didn't do anything, and it's kind of sad.
He talked to Spike and
He
threatened
found a
Spike.
castle.
He did find a
I
castle.
guess, but I feel like all this stuff could have been done by anyone else. It didn't feel like it really had to be done by
That's
Riley.
true.
They were just
Yeah,
like,
true. I
crap, we have to
agree.
give him something, or else we're going to lose this actor, so let's just, like, give him some exposition stuff. That's fine.
Your favorite scene, Danielle, actually goes into my favorite line, which is when they're on the beach and they're talking about, oh, we don't want to like get sweaty and stuff, and like it's not a good time. And Willow's like, I think we just put our finger on why we're the sidekicks. It's so true though, and like I really felt all of them in that scene. I was like, man, I don't like getting sweaty either. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine is maybe why Xander was the MVP of the episode, I guess. So after he's no longer brainwashed, he goes, "Damn it, you know what? I'm sick of this crap. I'm sick of being the guy who eats insects and gets the funny syphilis. As of this moment, it's over. I'm finished being everybody's butt monkey." And then everyone's kind of silent, and then Buffy goes, "Check. No more butt monkey."
Do I even want to know what a butt monkey represents? Is that like that big baboon with the big red butt? Is that what I'm thinking of? I don't know.
I think it's just maybe a turn of phrase. I don't know.
Yeah, which then it
Just because
becomes
the
even more
word's butt
disturbing because it's
monkey.
like, what does that really mean, Xander? I don't know.
I think
Butt
it's
monkey's
just
just a
a funny
funny
phrase.
dated term to talk about being taken advantage of.
Oh.
Yeah, like being the butt of everyone's jokes.
Oh, okay. I can get behind that.
And Danielle, you had a Xander line as well.
I did. So it's when Xander first encounters Dracula. And he says, "No, we're not going to leave you. And where'd you get that accent? Sesame Street? One, two, three victims." And Buffy goes, "Xander, I'm pretty sure that's Dracula." And Xander's like, "Wow, really? Hey, sorry, man. I was just joking around." I like when anybody brings out the Sesame Street,
Yep.
the count voice. It just
Yep.
makes me really happy. And then he switches real fast.
Is great.
I still wasn't scared of him there, though. I was like, whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be,
He's so
but
suave.
he is. Yeah, that hair, man. Whew. Mitch, your favorite line?
Yeah, of course, I picked an Anya line because now that she's a series regular, she's going to get more. Yay! So she was talking about her interactions with Dracula to Xander, and she said, "Well, we hung out a few times back in my demon days, you know, once or twice. He's pretty cool, you know, from a whole evil thing perspective." And I kind of want that episode. Like, Anya just chilling with Dracula. That would be cool. That's the kind of bottle episode I would support.
I liked her face when she was like an evil thing perspective.
Yeah, she has new
It's
hair,
great.
actually. It was almost kind of like, who's this character for a hot second for me? And I was like, oh, that's not good. Because they changed it so much, and I was shocked. I was like, whoa, you're very blonde now. What happened? I thought she was a great brunette. I wish she goes back to it. Maybe she does.
I honestly didn't notice.
Me neither.
Well, I'm hyper aware of her because she's one of my favorite characters, so that's part of why I think I was thinking about it. And like you can notice now if you're watching the show and you're seeing like her credit at the beginning in the intro, she's brunette for all that, but then she's very blonde in the show. And also it could be an issue of me saying like now we have like three blonde women, Tara, Buffy, and Anya, and that gets a little bit confusing visually for me sometimes in scenes because I don't know, it's just easier for me to associate like quick glances of people, and I think that muddles the camera just a little bit in those big Giles apartment scenes, but I could be alone on that. I'm not sure.
Actually, I completely understand where you're coming from because I have to remember people's hair more than their faces.
Yeah.
And so if they change their hair, it's like they're a completely new person in my head, which is really annoying and sometimes embarrassing.
Right.
So I feel you on that one. All right, let's jump into Angel, episode 201, Judgment. In this episode, Angel kills a pregnant woman's bodyguard, so he sings a song about it to make himself feel better. With a mystical offspring on the way, the pregnant woman is hunted by demons as something called a tribunal takes place. Angel protects the woman in battle, granting her asylum. Meanwhile, Darla is looking forward to paying Angel a visit, and Faith is holding back on her superpower usage at the prison yard. So this was a pretty good episode, I think, in my mind. And we started off with this pregnant woman and the fact that Angel kills her bodyguard, and they're always sort of doing that switch on the demons. You think they're bad, and then it's the human that's bad, or you think the demon is bad and is a killer, but this specific one has changed their ways. But regarding the pregnant woman, I want to know what you guys think about this, because Mitch, I think you put this in the doc about her, the baby, if we'll see the baby again, does it tie into the blind children, the seer children that have been cropping up, that sort of thing. You guys have any newbie theories for us?
Yeah, they might. Do you think, Danielle? Because we had those children for a reason, it felt. It didn't feel like in the episode Blind Date that they were just a one and done thing. They felt like universe building for the future. What do you think, Danielle?
I would hope so, that there's like some sort of significance. I honestly never thought about it before. Partially because it took me and I'm still struggling with it, but it took me a really long time to figure out like why the woman was being hunted, why there had to be a tribunal for it, like who was after her and why. So I'm hoping that the why would be because the baby, I know the baby has some sort of importance, but that we get to see it later on and it makes this make sense. Because it did not make sense to me. So, yeah, my hope is that there is something happening, but just because, like, it's just nonsensical to me.
But you know what leans me away from this actually being important? She wasn't given a name. And that's really odd to me that you would do that and, not give a character a name but then have their offspring come about later. Because then how do you reference them? Like, you'd have to tell a story to reference them as opposed to just say, Teresa, you're back or whatever. Like, that would have worked more for me. So I think she's out of the play and so is her baby. Which is then, to me, making this episode a lot less consequential. I'm like, okay, cool. This is the most one and done we can get because definitely this child won't matter. The only way this can absolutely tie in at all is if we're meant to be seeing a pattern, Danielle, of seer children. And if that's supposed to be important on Angel, because we're seeing seers crop up very often on the show, and that's something we're not familiar with in Buffy. So I'm wondering, yes, I can see how important seers are, but is there definitely like an ultimate goal, like gather a whole bunch together and you're able to see even more of the future, or?
At the top of the episode, we also see Darla, and she's looking a little bit better than the last time we saw her in the finale. She's got her sights set on Angel as well as Wolfman Hart. And Caitlin, I wanted to know what you think about seeing her again.
I think this is gonna, it can be interesting because it's been, a while since we've seen Darla, and Angel has gone through quite a bit since the last time he saw her. So it should be, so she has this very set idea in her mind of, who he was the last time she saw him and what's happened to him. So I think it'll be interesting for Angel's character and all the growth that he's gone through to see how he reacts to her and then how she reacts in response to the ways he's changed since she was dusted all those seasons ago. So I think it provides an interesting insight to see how much things have changed.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And newbies, do you have any theories about why Wolfram and Hart is bringing Darla back, if they have any ultimate goals, and what you think might happen to her, how big of a role she'll play?
I don't know. Well, this kind of goes back, we kind of discussed it a little bit in the last episode, but like, I'm not a fan of Darla. So I'm hoping that it's like, it's something good, something interesting, rather than perhaps just a distraction for Angel. Because they kept trying to take out Angel constantly. And now they bring back Darla, who has a direct connection to Angel. So I'm hoping that her importance is more than just being a distraction, but that's kind of how it feels like right now. Because they keep mentioning like him to her or whatever. So
I have no clue, because it doesn't feel like Wolfram and Hart is a villain that I understand yet. And I guess that's supposed to be, but I don't like that. I wish we knew more about what was going on with them. I don't get their ultimate goal. I get that they're evil. I get that they represent demons. They like evil things, but why? It just feels so empty. And that's, to me, a bit of a concern that I'm having for the show of Angel, that the show can start to feel empty when you don't have a consistent villain that makes sense. We didn't have Wolfram and Hart for a lot of season one. They kind of just jumped in and out when they wanted to, but they never had an importance. They had this ambiguity. I didn't say that word correct, but you got what I meant.
Ambiguity.
Now, ambiguity, yes. So now I'm wondering, is this going to continue? Like, are we just going to wait until the series finale to actually see why they mattered, why we care about them? And I don't want that. I don't want them to drag out the plot of, what are they doing? You might find out next episode. I want to just know. I want to know why they matter and why I should care.
Patience is a virtue, Mitch.
The season is 22 episodes long.
But also, I am with Mitch, because they did seem very rushed last season. And it's just like, why, lawyers? What are you doing? Just tell me something and stop trying to be, like, so mysterious.
That's a fair point. I will give you that one.
Maybe they're, like, really ruling the world. Because there was something about, Lindsay, I'm giving you the world. And I was like, okay, I guess you could actually look at that as being a bit of, like, a bigger picture thing. Like, they actually have power over the supernatural, or maybe, I mean, we did see the powers that be representatives, I guess, get murdered. I don't think that they were the powers that be. They were just, like, some of them. I don't really know what's going on with that either. I wish I knew, guys.
Either.
Yeah, like, Danielle, I'm so lost in Angel. I want to know. I want to know so bad. I have a strong interest, and it's not being fed at all. It's just being, like, questioned and having more, like, twists and weird things thrown in. And I guess I'm starting to care more about the characters. That's important. Now that we have Gunn coming in, and Cordelia is still fun, and you know, Wesley's around to stay after we had the bit with Doyle in the beginning. So,
and Green Guy.
Yeah. So in the Green Guy, he's going to be cool. So it's like I because Buffy always has done really a really good job at creating what it seems like to me, like the characters first and then the supernatural baddie. But Angel doesn't really do the baddie at all. It just goes with the character, which is fine and good. But I think that that needs to be propped up by that supernatural baddie to make what they're doing matter.
I think Angel plays the long game. I think Buffy does too. But in Angel, it might be a little bit harder to see what's going on. And that can be difficult. Especially when you're watching it for the first time. The second time around, you kind of pick up on things. You know what's coming. You're anticipating it. You can sort of revel in the way that they draw it out and put it out there, like, point by point. Right now, though, I do completely understand you guys wanting to just know the answers. But hopefully, when you do get the answers, it'll all be worth it.
Yeah,
we'll have
I
to
would
wait
say,
until that point.
I would say it's a lot of it's because Angel is heavily influenced by noir, and things are never as they seem in noir stories. So that's very intentional in terms of the genre that Angel, the show, is kind of embracing for what it is.
That's a good
Definitely.
point. That's an interesting point. I'll have to keep an eye on that in that context.
So what'd you guys think about that demon karaoke bar?
So much fun.
I thought that was Kirk from Gilmore Girls again coming back for a third role, and I got kind of excited. Did it look like Sean Gunn to anyone else now that we actually know who he is?
A little bit. I mean, I guess I didn't like have the same thought as you,
Yeah.
but I think my preconceptions of what he would be like because he has that sort of face would be similar to how I feel about Sean Gunn, if that makes sense.
I mean, it's hard to tell behind all the demon makeup, and that's on purpose because that's why they were able to allow him to play like Doyle's cousin and then just like the sassy spa man. Like, they were able to rock that. But I was like, are you just putting him in more demon makeup to let us forget that he was just playing a human? I don't know. But it was still fun. Once again, a character that didn't get a name that was important, because I feel like he's going to come back. Maybe. It'd be cool if he did. He was fun. He's a
Green
cool
guy.
power.
And I was thinking about it just now, but like I hope the fact that like I have seen his face before like isn't any sort of spoiler, because I know nothing about Angel. I have no idea like what episodes I walked into my mom watching, but just that like I had seen his face before. But he is really fun. He is more fun than I thought he would be.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the only characters who has come in like this where it doesn't feel like he has any sort of ulterior motives. Like he has no ounce of sketch to him, which I don't know if I should be sketched out by, but he's someone, you know, like
Yeah,
if you
no, I
go,
totally know what you mean.
if you like go in, I mean, I know how shows work. I do. And you should never just completely outright trust someone because when you do that, they betray you. Sometimes it's a very emotional, but like, there are no like radars or anything going off in my head about Green Guy.
Wait, is this green? So there's green guy and there's green spiky guy.
There are two different guys?
Because you're referencing an up-and-coming green spiky guy. It's not this green guy, is it?
I don't know. I thought it was this one.
So maybe he's important? That'd be cool. You know
I
what's
don't
fun, though?
know. That's what I'm
Okay.
saying. And I hope I don't like accidentally spoil things because I know nothing.
Well, me
But like
neither, and
your
that's what makes it
Green
even more
Guy,
fun.
because I thought that. The reason why I thought he was Spike also is because Spike's name is Spike and Green Guy has spikes.
You know what I would like? Okay,
So.
so I'm calling this guy
Also, they
Green.
both have excellent cheekbones.
Yes,
Yes.
Danielle, I'm calling this guy Green Spiky Guy, right? This is because he doesn't have a name, so we're gonna call him that for now.
That's fine.
I would be really fine and happy if he was to stick around because he's really like hitting on Angel in a way that I think Angel likes, and it's kind of hot in a weird like green spiky guy way.
Interspecies kind of way.
It's like I can kind of get behind it because. In that Sean Gunn way that green spiky guy has, he has like this kind of boyishness to him that I think livens up Angel, and it makes him in the show a more lively thing. The show needs some life. Cordelia lost her superpower of comedy, and the show is starting to feel like it's like a void. Like it's starting to like try and bring in Gunn for that role, I think, and maybe green spiky guy could come in and do that too because. I loved his sassy gayness. I thought it was fabulous. I wanted him to hit on Angel even more because honestly, I was just kind of waiting for them to like show up in a broom closet and like a jump cut, like a smash cut,
Oh my
just
gosh.
bam, they're just making out. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Mitch,
Wow.
I want to come back to something you just said, but first, like Caitlin, super fan corner. I love this scene. I'm really excited about this for a lot of different reasons that obviously we can't talk about. It's so hard not to talk about spoilers. Do you like it as well? Was this cool?
Love it.
Okay.
I put it in caps lock in the doc because I wanted to make sure we talked about
Okay, good.
it.
Awesome. I'm glad that you put that in there. Yes. This may be the hardest that I've ever not talked about things before because I'm very excited, but that's fine. We'll move on before I spoil anything. Mitch, you were saying that Cordelia lost her superpower of comedy, and I am sad that you feel that way because I still think Cordelia is hilarious, but I also know what you mean in that she really came out in full force in this episode. She was naming off demons. She was making fun of Wesley for, like, saying the wrong thing. She was going hardcore on the research and all of that. Do you not like that? Or do miss the comedy?
I miss the comedy, but I love Cordelia being serious. I love Cordelia in nearly every aspect of her character from, you know, season one of Buffy till now. I think she's an amazing growth. I love that she's done what she's done now. I think that it took that serious episode of her being tortured by all those visions of nearly being put in an insane asylum to grow up in a way that felt really organic and very natural for the character. But like I'm saying, I think we need more comedic relief. And the way that this show runs, Buffy and Angel, both, they need comedic relief. They need to lighten up from the very dark, murderous demon plots. So I'm wondering now if that's going to be Gunn. It feels like it's going to be Gunn. But it doesn't really make sense to me, because Gunn sticking around and actually caring about Angel Investigations is odd. Why would he care about this group that he's like kind of interested in them from like an outside perspective? Like, yeah, you're all kind of funny and cute, and I give you little toys every once in a while, but I'll be back. But now it's like, oh, he's actually important, and that doesn't feel like that worked out organically for me. So I'm really confused with the direction of the characters in their circle here that they're trying to build an Angel.
How do you feel about Cordelia right now, Danielle?
I don't know. I'm conflicted, because I didn't like when she was just like stupid or dropping dumb observations just to be the comic relief. But I do think that her being the comic relief has lessened. But I also think that even though she is less of the comic relief, that other characters have gotten more. Like, I think we've seen more of Angel's humor than we have in the past, or that, like, he's continuing to be more and more comedic as time goes on. And that I think Wesley is maybe getting a few more things. So instead of having it being concentrated in one person, it's now dispersed over, like, a few people. And I like Cordelia being smarter, so maybe she could be more of a comic relief in, like, in a smart way, or like throwing out like really, really fun references or like things that people don't know. But for right now, it does feel like she is less of the comic relief, but I don't know if I hate it.
Caitlin, agree or disagree?
I didn't really notice a decrease in Cordelia's comedy, to be honest. Like, I can see that she's getting more mature, but I didn't think she's any less funny.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that the most. She's definitely changing, and between season 4 and 5, there was definitely a growth in her knowledge, and she seems much more invested. I mean, even at the top of the episode, when we see her acting and she gets called away, she's not complaining. It's not anything that is an issue for her. That is her top priority. Being an actress used to be her top priority, and this was the way that she paid the bills. But now she's 100% invested, and I think that only adds. And I think that perhaps some of the maturity makes it seem like she's less funny, but I don't think that that's necessarily the case. And of course, this is only episode 1 back in the new season, so we'll have to wait and see where it goes. But speaking of Gunn, I love Gunn so much. He's so funny, and I think he really And I think he really shakes up the show in a lot of ways. And I just wanted to know, newbies, if you guys are excited to see him maybe stick around.
I mean, yay for a person of color. That is a good thing. I don't know too much other bits about the character, and definitely don't know anything spoiler-wise about him, so that's good. Going in very blank, you know, into the character, so that makes it difficult for me to say if I'd love or hate him. This is like, Angel Season 2 is still reminding me of Buffy Season 1 and 2, I guess, that I didn't know anything about the characters enough to know whether I did or didn't like them. And the little bits that I saw them defined them very strongly, because we didn't have much yet. So the most I could really say about him is, yeah, you're a badass and you're on our side. So that's pretty good.
I like him. I'm not in love with him yet, but I will say that I enjoy that we're getting this quippier, happier version of Gunn than the one that we saw at the end of the introduction episode for him. With his sister, which I completely understand. Like, I do not know how I would be able to, what I would be like going through something similar. But at the same time, even before his sister died, he was just not likable to me. He was not someone that I could really invest myself in because he didn't want that. Like, he's not someone that he wants anybody invested in him. And the way that he is now, when we first saw him, when Angel was asking for his help, I was like, oh, why are they bringing this guy back? He's such a downer. But then he goes into Wolfram and Heart and, like, goes crazy in their lobby.
That was great. I love that.
So there, that Gunn, I am completely on board with. And as long as that Gunn sticks around, I think I will really grow to like him and what he has to bring to the whole cast and the story of Angel.
And Caitlin, I wanted to ask you what you thought about Gunn and Angel's interesting relationship, because by all accounts, Gunn really shouldn't trust Angel. I mean, I think Angel has proved himself in a lot of ways, but their camaraderie and Gunn's eagerness even to help Angel is always something that I really pick up on.
Yeah, I'm always interested in how quickly Angel trusts Gunn with very important things. Like in the season one finale, he has Gunn go watch over Cordelia and Wesley in the hospital. Like, those are the most important things to him, and he trusts Gunn to look after them while he's taking care of things. And I think it's interesting that, and then he goes to Gunn pretty much immediately when he needs help that he can't get from Wesley and Cordelia. So I find it interesting that as much as we don't expect Gunn to trust Angel, I wouldn't necessarily have expected Angel to trust Gunn as much as he does as quickly. But I think that tells us, I think I said this in the last episode, that it tells us a lot about who Gunn is, that he's just a good person that Angel trusts. Because if Angel was more hesitant towards him, that would probably tell us something. But the fact that he's so trusting of him so quickly, that means we as the audience can probably trust him too.
And I like how Angel's becoming like the happy papa to all these people, because he's trying to be serious and like, I'm the boss, y'all gotta listen to me. And they're like, lol, no. And that's the best, because I love it when Angel's trying to, like, punish the kids, and they're like, la 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 la, and Gunn's joining in on that, too, and it's so cute.
Yeah, because Angel is such a loner, the idea that he is reaching out to other people and relying on them and trusting them is just, you know, again, more character growth, and I think it's really nice to see that, and it's really nice to see that with Gunn in particular, because I just really like their dynamic. Caitlin, I also wanted to ask you about this idea that Angel is, you know, still kind of thinking about the idea that he's going to be human again one day. Like, it's a funny joke, but he's talking about going to the gym and you know, it's definitely something that is weighing on his mind. What do you think is actually going through his head, like, to be immortal for this long and to have this opportunity that he could be human again? You know, we kind of already saw how he reacted to it once with that episode with Buffy, but the idea that this is his reward someday is so interesting.
I was going to tie this back to that episode, that I think if he had not experienced that, it would be kind of just an abstract idea. But fairly recently, he got to experience what it's like and the kind of life he can have. He can be with Buffy. He can, you know, eat ice cream and all this kind of things. Like, he can have a life again. And it's not an abstract thing for him anymore because he has experienced it. So I think that makes it more real for him. And it's happened once, so why can't it happen again? So I think because he had that experience is why he still focuses on it.
You know, Danielle, I think it's important
that you're, point.
Danielle, I think it's important that you're on this episode with me because I have a point about food, and I know that you and I are great food lovers. So I want to know.
I always enjoy food.
Of course. And Angel did love that peanut butter and ice cream or whatever. I want to know if the vampires can or can't taste food or what happens when they eat, because that's probably one of the most important parts for me of being human. So I want to know why he cares so much. I want to know if that food doesn't matter when Cordelia offers him coffee or whatever it is. I don't know. Like, is he actually tasting that stuff? That's important to me to know, because then if I had to choose between, like, you can be a vampire, you'll live forever, but you won't be able to eat food, I'd be like, okay, food's the deal breaker. I'm out. Make me human again.
Yeah, I don't think he can, because in the episode where he became human, he was eating everything in the fridge and talking about, like, how great it all tastes. So yeah. I don't think he could. And yeah, I think that would be a deal breaker for me, too.
Right?
But, like, you know, like, to put food in your mouth, there's something about, it's just very comforting to eat something. But when you can't taste it, which I know a lot of people actually have issues tasting and smelling things, and like, that is so sad to me.
That's one of my worst fears. Oh my god, no.
Yeah. I also assume that because they're dead, like, their digestive systems don't work, so they can't, like, process anything, like, food that goes into them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's gross.
Well, okay, so Twilight reference alert. Twilight, okay. They cough up the food in that series. I liked that. It made sense. They have to, like, cough it up later. That's what Robert Pattinson would say. So, like, that makes sense to me if that's what they're doing here. Maybe we hear that reference later, and that's where Stephanie Meyer stole it from. I'd be cool with that, because I think Buffy needs to have come up with that idea, because it seems like a little... I shouldn't knock her. Although we all kind of know Twilight's a very big Buffy ripoff in a lot of ways, but moving on from that.
Yes. Okay. Final point to this episode was that Angel visits Faith while she is still in jail, and she talks about struggling with not wanting to kill people, but definitely holding back from it and taking a beating nonetheless and not necessarily fighting back. So she is progressing, and this scene didn't necessarily offer us an advancement in the plot, but nice to know that they haven't forgotten that this is a thing. And also just nice to see Angel visiting Faith and checking up on her. So I wanted to know what you guys thought of this back and forth in particular. And Caitlin, we can start with you.
Well, this is my favorite scene. So...
Oh, well. Okay. Sorry.
But I really love it because we see this dynamic between Angel and Faith. Like, they're... You know, they're there for each other. Angel's there to support her. But then they can just joke with each other. Like, talks about singing Barry Manilow. And she's just like, well, what am I talking about problems? You sang Barry Manilow in front of people. Like, I don't know. I just find the whole thing very sweet and kind of goes back to the idea that, you know, Angel was really the only one capable of rescuing her at the point that she was at. So I really like that dynamic. I like the idea that Faith is working towards redemption and she's trying really hard, because we know that she could kill any of these people with, like, the flick of her pinky, basically, if she wanted to. And she's not. And that Angel has this chance that he is helping her, and that they're just continuing to explore that dynamic. And I find it really touching, basically. And I think it's really good for Faith and really good for Angel.
And it's nice to know that Eliza's sticking around too. At least probably in Angel. I think she's done in Buffy, doing her major arcs there. I think she's done as much as she can. No one else is really going to wander around enough to make her feel like she can do anything there that's even relatively positive. If we're sticking on her whole redemption arc, I think she needs to stay with an Angel.
I like that she's still around. And like Caitlin was saying, I thought that the scene was very touching. I have never really hated Faith. I've always kind of been on Angel's side with her. And so the fact that we know that he's going to visit her, or seeing how hard she's struggling, but also just really trying. And it was just a very intimate in that, like, it's the two of them separated by this pane of, like, plexiglass, and just sitting there talking to each other and kind of ignoring everything else that's around them. I thought it was a really surprising end to the episode, but a really pleasant surprise. And like I said, a really touching scene.
Awesome. And I mean, this kind of, like Caitlin said, this was her favorite scene. We already talked about my favorite scene, which was the demon karaoke bar. So let's just do favorite scenes right now. And Danielle, why don't you tell us yours?
So my favorite scene was the sort of cold open that we get with the trio just being complete badasses. And I'm calling it a cold open because we get no real context, and it's kind of really different from any sort of opening or sort of any scene that we've seen in Angel so far. So it's very different, and you're just kind of dropped in the middle of what's going on. And they like bust through doors and like blast through the wall of a gym, and they're just really completely in sync with each other. And yes, later on we kind of find out that, like, yes, they were pushing too hard or they got too confident, but at the same time it was really nice to see that confidence, to see them working so in sync and know what they're doing and get the job done and save people as quickly, as efficiently as possible.
That way that they're so in sync with each other always really gets me, because you can tell, like, things have been happening while we've been off screen. And just like Buffy sort of skips the summer every year, we also skip, you know, the summer with Angel, because we know that they're in sync. And the idea that this is their new dynamic, that this is the dynamic that they've been growing into, I think is really cool to see on screen. And Mitch, your favorite scene?
Mine is when Cordelia and Wesley meet Gunn, because they try and play it off like they know his name is just one N and it's for a street rep, but it's really just his last name. And I liked that play on the character's name. I thought it was cute.
It was pretty funny. I just love how he just like shuts them down. He's like, Charles Gunn, two N's.
Yeah.
But then he's like, I'm just giving you crap.
He has stay power. Like, I like the actor. What's his name?
J. August Richards.
Yeah, he's going to do a good job. It's going to be fun to see him stick around. I'm excited to see what happens with this character.
I'm glad to hear that. Mm-hmm. Favorite lines now. Mine, God, I love this part. It's when Cordy sneezes, but she's like getting prepared and she looks like she's going to have a vision. And then she goes, just a sneeze. And then there's like, then she does it again and they're like, huh? And she goes, just a sneeze. Followed by a vision, and then she has a vision. But the fact that they're like, vision, and they're ready to catch her, and then she just sneezes was so funny.
Was this the painkiller one? Painkiller!
Oh, no, that was before.
Yeah. They're always trying to find new ways to, like, play on Cordy's visions, and I like it. That's like, good comedy that she still has going.
Yeah, definitely. Caitlin, your favorite line?
Mine is Angel, when he says, there are three things I don't do: tan, date, and sing in public. And that being said, how are the credits to this nobody's favorite scene? Because you've got Angel at the bar, and it's amazing.
It was so painful, though. So painful.
Describe it to us newbies that are really spoiler-phobic and turn off the show as soon as the credits hit.
Did you not watch it?
I'm afraid to. I can't.
You can go back and watch it. Just watch the end credits.
I swear to, like, jump to, like, the preview image of the next episode, or, well, now I can. I have to wait until we've podcasted about it, actually. Or until I'm watching the
episode. You're really spoiler phobic. That's
I have
crazy.
To be, because one time Oz was just naked on my screen, and I was like, I guess Oz is going to be naked on my screen.
I don't know if I remember this well, credit thing.
These credits are very much like the ones where Angel and Wesley are dancing in the credits.
But
it's
Angel.
It's Angel at the karaoke bar, like, singing, but he's like trying to play to the room, and it's so funny.
No. Okay, I'm watching it.
I'm going to have, Caitlin, that FOMO I was talking about, it's going to continue. I'm going to rely on you to always tell me if there are cute Angel credits, because I'll go back and watch them later, but I can't risk it. There's always, as soon as I think I've conquered the spoilers, they find a way to sneak in and autoplay, and I'm always angry.
I mean, it's probably a good thing that you're so worried about it. That way you can have as pure of experience as you can in 2016.
Yeah. But you have to watch these credits. Yes. They're really funny.
What was the dancing episode? Do you guys remember the name? I want to watch that one, too.
They went to some party because Cordelia had a friend or something, right? And he had a party?
I think. I kind of forget the context. I just remember Angel dancing.
God. I don't even remember.
This wasn't the one where she became, great. Like, a pregnant cultist, right?
Oh, maybe.
I think it was.
It might have been.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to go back because, like, I get really impatient with Netflix and knowing that, like, as soon as that first credit sort of card reads,
created
that
I can hit the stop button
and it'll register as I finish the episode. Like, I just do that now, but now I have to actually watch credits.
Well, you know, you can make credits big screen. You can make credits big screen, and then it kind of plays. It holds off the autoplay, but it'll still come up. So you might still get that image. So just watch.
Oh, I mean, movies. I watch through my TV, so I'm not even using like the computer.
Yeah.
So like I have like a remote and stuff, like but yeah, deal. I'm gonna have to be better about actually making it all the way through.
Yeah.
There are gems in there, and
does
don't
Buffy ever do this?
Do
we miss any?
I think they talk over like the first card of the credits, but they've never actually done anything.
Yeah, kind of like the guys kind of credits, yeah. But nothing like a full conversation, right?
Which yeah.
Okay, because I don't want to miss out. I love these shows so much, and I love these little.
Yeah,
bits.
I like the sass. Sass of the credits is awesome.
Yeah, the sass is strong with this one.
Danielle, what was your favorite line?
My favorite line. So I had to. Quick go in here. I was the last one. So I really loved Caitlin's. And actually Brittany had picked this one, so I'm picking it from her. And it's basically when Angel is talking to the pregnant woman, telling him that like saving people or whatever is his job. And she goes, "Your job?" And Angel says, "Yeah, look, I've got cards."
But it's the enthusiasm with which he says it. He's like, "Yeah, look. I've got cards." It's so great.
He's so like, awkward.
Business cards are so important. They're so, like, when you have them, you just want to give them to everybody. Yeah. Like, I just put them in all of the restaurant, like win a free meal, put your credit card or your business card in here. Like, just show them to everybody. So I understand his enthusiasm.
I had some really pretty, like, rainbow hypeable ones, and I was so proud at Comic-Con. I was like, "You get a card, and you get a card."
Mitch, what was your favorite line?
Mine is when Angel is talking to his new boyfriend, Spiky Green Man, and they're talking about the fact that Angel decided to sing the song Mandy, and Angel says, "Well, I know the words. I kind of think it's pretty." I was like, "Here we go, ship time."
That's great. Okay, so wrapping up this episode, once again, we'd like to remind you of our contact information. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find us on this post on hypable.com or rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And as always, we really appreciate if you guys can keep it spoiler-free. And we also really appreciate it if you can give us iTunes reviews, particularly 5 stars. We love 5-star reviews. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will seduce and bite you, just like Dracula.
Well, sign me up.
Have a care. Karen really does love Halloween. That's true.
Yeah. She'll fully commit.
Mitch, I really appreciate how enthusiastic you were about that. Thank you.
Of course.
All right, let's get into some listener feedback. We've got quite a few from Twitter. Caitlin, would you like to kick us off?
Sure. Laura Morrow says, "Season 1 finale of Angel was epic. It made my heart melt and also made me scream at my laptop. Bring on season 2. Yeah, I thought it was pretty epic too.
And Danielle, the next one?
Of course, this one is from Melissa Miller. She said, "First time I saw Restless, I fell asleep and missed the whole episode. Winky face. If only I could remember what I was dreaming about. I am with you, Melissa."
Cheese man.
I wanted to fall asleep. But yeah, if the cheese man was in it, I feel like that would be very memorable. So you could kind of like scratch him off your list of what you were dreaming about.
I hope the cheese man comes back. I'd be fine with that. Like, if cheese was the ultimate saving grace of the Buffyverse, like, "Eat cheese and you'll be super-powered, Buffy. No vampire will bite you again."
Well, Willow tells Riley that when he's trying to pick her up that she likes cheese, and so he should ask her about cheese.
Oh, now we're going back into my evil Willow theories. Maybe protect yourself from Willow. Give her cheese.
If cheese gave you superpowers, I would rule the planet.
Yes.
I would give you so a fight for cheese. That.
Mitch, would you like to get this next one?
Sure, this is from Vicky. Vicky wrote, "Wow, great analysis of Restless and very compassionate defense of Buffy the Vampire Slayer by Selena Wilkin. Good job, superfan."
Yes, definitely. And next, we've got Stephanie Merrill, who says, "So would the newbies be up for dramatic reenactments of their reactions to the last scene of Buffy versus Dracula?"
So this is like the one, not and the then, one where she's staking him.
What was the last scene? Was it Buffy staking him?
Oh no. Okay, dramatic reenactments of their reactions to the fact that Buffy has a sister.
And oh, of the episode.
Stephanie also says, "I've been waiting 51 weeks for this moment."
Oh.
Wow. Damn. You are committed, Stephanie.
So, dramatic reenactments. Do you guys remember exactly how you reacted when the sister word bomb was dropped?
I'm trying to think.
Because I
probably was like, Georgina's back?
Georgina's back. She never goes away, Mitch. You know this.
Gossip Girl just invades my life.
I would say it was just a very emphatic, what? That was it.
I thought the emphaticism, I thought it was on the...
Just like that. It was just flat out, what?
I love that you, like, cleared your throat so that you could make sure that it was correct.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she asked for a dramatic reading or a dramatic reenactment. Yeah. So, like, I had to be as true and also, like, make it sound a little bit different from my normal voice.
I think also, I was on mute when I just said that.
Also, I'm calling out Stephanie because she turned off listening to Hero Hype to listen to our last episode of Rewatchable. And I was a little hurt by that. Except that I was on both, so oh well.
You know where the priorities are. Thank you, Stephanie. You're my new favorite listener. Moving on. Caitlin, would you like to get our last tweet?
Yeah, Shauna Evans says, "Judgment, a decidedly mediocre episode, but worth it for Mandy." This is always worth it for Mandy. And David Boreanaz sings karaoke on Bones as well. Just throwing it out there.
I actually sing.
I think so.
Because it sounded he was the type of singer that was like, it sounded like he was making himself sound bad, but he actually can sing. Kind of like Miranda sings.
I would think so. I would think that he would be able to carry some sort of tune, just because I feel like a lot of actors have to have at least like a base level of that. I think it's very rare where people don't have that ability.
Well, a lot of and what so, comes with acting comes with knowing tone, and tone comes with knowing song sometimes, so I guess that makes sense.
Right, and I think if he didn't have some sort of good voice, that he would be, like, really not fun, uncomfortable in singing Mandy on this episode, whereas, like, this was actually, like, funny and enjoyable, whereas his awkwardness, if he didn't know how to do it, would be, like, unpalatable.
Yeah, it would have basically been like, oh, are we supposed to like this if he was actually really bad? But now it's like, oh, we're not supposed to like this because we know he's playing bad.
Exactly.
Sure. And Danielle, would you like to get our comment from Hypeable?
I would love to. This one comes from Tucker Conley. And he says, "As a super fan, still not sure I love Restless, but I think I could appreciate more after seeing the whole series. And as a Lost fan, I gotta disagree with Selena on the Lost finale. I loved it, but it's okay that not everybody does. Like Selena said, everyone likes different things."
Very well put. I've not seen the Lost finale, so I have no opinion on that.
I don't either.
Don't get into Lost because you'll regret it. Because you're going to be so invested in the characters.
Oh, I regretted it after a season and a half, and then I gave up, so... Yeah. Okay, we're going to finish out this episode with Danielle's deliberations and Mitch's musings. First up, we have Buffy 502 Real Me. Discuss.
Okay, so Buffy's like getting into more of the First Slayer stuff, I think. If this is about Buffy. Because the only other real me I could really think of... Actually, I could think of one for almost every character. But the other two ones would be probably Willow and Xander. Xander searching for his real self all this time, or Willow's... coming out or wanting to become more of a witch, I guess.
Or what if real me exposes the fact that someone did in fact go back in time and mess with the timeline so that the sister is now here. And so we have Buffy from the other timeline that we've been in so far facing off with Buffy from the timeline where the sister is. And then you have to figure out which one is the real me.
I kind of imagine it being like OG universe Buffy knocking on the mirror saying like, no, don't go there. Like, that's the kind of real me I'm seeing here. But you're right, though. Like, we're definitely within magic if we're talking real me and we're talking Michelle coming in on the show. I wish you knew the character's name. Is it a spoiler to know the name, superfans? Can we know that yet? Or is that, like, we'll learn it when we watch it?
I would like you guys to wait.
Okay, yeah. I'm assuming it's going to be something really ethereal sounding. So we have, like, Faith, Angel, Cordelia, Buffy. So it's going to be very epic.
Hello.
Tara. For Angel 201, are you now or have you ever been?
So I'm seeing this as kind of being like on a job application where it's like, are you now or have you ever been a felon question? Is that what you were understanding, the context, Danielle?
Yeah, that context, it's definitely a phrase I've heard quite a bit.
So does this deal with, like, now we're talking jobs, does this deal with, like, Leslie's promotion or Lindsay's promotion?
Oh, I was thinking more of, like, Angel possibly meeting up with, oh God, what's her name? The girl with the name that got resurrected at the end of last season. Darla. And we kind of like, that's the one. And he's kind of facing off with her, but then also some sort of like younger version of himself comes through too. And so he's facing off with like a younger version. And so it's like, are you now or have you ever been in reference to his younger version?
If you ever forget really her name, just think, if you ever forget her name, just thinking of that little girl from Finding Nemo that kills fish.
See, I don't like Finding Nemo, so that wouldn't do any.
Blasphemy.
Also, I knew it was a D name. I did know it was a D name. I just couldn't think of what it was.
Yeah. Yeah, Darla. Darla's going to probably be in play there. I think you're right. I don't think that Lindsay's going to come in for a bit more. I'm trying to think. Did we even see him in this, Lindsay, in this episode?
Yeah. He was with Darla.
He had trouble with his hand.
Like I remember he was trying to, like,
he was playing the music.
Right, okay. I remember now. So, I'm curious. This is going to be... These are very ambiguous episode titles. I think Real Me's a little bit less ambiguous, though, because I do think we hit it there with it being about Michelle Trachtenberg doing something with alternate universes and her magic. She has to be a witch! Like, that's a thing, right?
We'll just have to find out, but very good deliberations and musings here, and we'll just have to wait until next week to find out all of the answers. So until next time, I'm Karen.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Danielle.
And I'm Mitch.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
See, Caitlin, when your dog wants your attention, he just puts his cute little nose on you. My cat bites my elbow and then goes into her crinkly tube.
Gage is currently sleeping under the Christmas tree.
Lucky dog. Aww.